Victor Villasenor is one of America's most acclaimed writers, but he didn't get there without a few bumps along the way. Going to school was hell. In his memoir, Burro Genius, Villasenor talks about the abuse he suffered as a Latino in an English-only school system and what it took to heal him of his shame and anger. He says there couldn't have been a bigger disconnect between his idyllic home life and his first day in school.
I grew up on a ranch, and inside the gates of the ranch, everybody spoke Spanish, and I had friends that would come over there, and my best friend was my dog and my horse and my family, and, you know, we'd milk cows and make homemade cheese. I had a chair up in a loquat tree. That's a fruit, and I'd eat loquats and just reach around the tree and eat till my belly was full. It was just like growing up in paradise, and there were deer and fox and coyotes, and I knew where all these animals lived, right next to the ocean. We'd go horseback riding. But then going to school was the nightmare.
So for you, going to school was like being kicked out of the Garden of Eden?
Absolutely. I mean, the first day they screamed at us, no Spanish, English only. And I got so scared I peed in my pants. And then I ran out the door with the other kids, and we were trying to figure out what to do. And we're talking in Spanish, and the playground teacher came in and said, you already told, no Spanish, English only. And I peed in my pants again. I was so scared. And one kid said, don't be yelling at me. You're not my mother. And then she grabs him, and he said, let go of me. You don't have the right to be grabbing me. And she started slapping him. And then he cussed her out in Spanish, and she slapped him until he was bloody. And that was our introduction into the American school system of English only.
Of course, it didn't make you feel very good about any possible connection to American society.
Well, actually, that's not what happened. It's the opposite. When my mother picked me up that afternoon, I hated my mother. I didn't like her anymore because she had left me there. And when I got home, I didn't trust my father anymore because he told me school would be fun for me because everybody loved Mexicans and we were great people. And I realized my parents were fools. So what happened was I began to hate my culture, not like or trust my parents, learn English at the price of having my spirit crushed. And that's why I have the title Burro Genius of the book.
What does it mean to you, the Burro Genius?
Well, I give talks around the country, and when I ask kindergarten kids, how many of you are geniuses? They all raise their hand. One kid flipped on the floor and raised both legs up in the air, both arms, and I said, boy, you're really a genius. And he said, oh, yeah, I'm really a genius. I said, how do you know? He said, oh, look what I do. And he showed me his finger paintings. And you know, by the third grade, there are not many geniuses. And by the fifth grade, no kid raises their hand. They've been crushed, intimidated. And genius doesn't mean smart. If you look it up in the dictionary, genius means guardian deity, spirit of a person, natural ability. According to ancient Roman belief, a guardian spirit assigned at birth.
So what our school system does is try to get rid of the native genius.
Exactly. And they did it not just to me and the black kids. They do it to all the white kids. By fifth grade, we have A students that just memorize information and test well and memorize more information and test well. But the ability to think, to dream, to access, as Christ said, the kingdom of God is within us all. And when we access that, we're accessing our genius. And Emerson said, when we bring what's within out into the world, miracles happen. So our educational system is destroying our genius all over. And so what my book's about is about not just a Mexican kid, about all of us getting back our spirits.
It's good that you feel this way, but it's clear that the way you tell this story, that a lot of it was fueled by racial hatred. That there was more of this for you and the black kids and the other Mexican kids than there was for the Anglos in the class.
Oh, absolutely. I was told by the playground teacher, you know, white is right, and you're not white. You don't even belong here. You belong south of the border. And there's no purpose in even going to school. You're never going to amount to anything. And she believed it. And they would punish us and hit us and treat us really horrible.
And your friend Ramon, who said, no, you can't do that to me. How long did he continue to fight back?
He fought back, and they kept hitting him. And by the seventh grade, he was dead. And boy, I'll start crying. So the kids that did, the Mexican kids that did the best growing up were the ones that stopped calling themselves Mexicans. They kept saying that they were really Spanish, that they were really French, that they weren't Mexicans. It's the ones that denied who we were and denied our culture and tried every way they could to join the American mainstream European base mentality.
But it's clear you also managed to learn what you'd call your real heritage, the way you talk about what you learned from your father, your mother, your brother, the ranch hands. It makes it pretty clear that if only in the summers you learned what your heritage had to teach you.
It was all summer, every vacation, every weekend, and every afternoon. And I learned incredible things like this. Like in English, you say, let's break the horse. And they do it to horses, too. They break the spirit. In Spanish, the word is amansar. That means to make tame. And the guys from Mexico, they would take a young colt, and they wouldn't jump on it and beat it and make it buck. They would brush it and wash it and bathe it and pick up its hoofs, and the horse got to trust them. And then they'd put a blanket on it, and they'd walk it around. And pretty soon, that horse loved them. And then we'd put a saddle on it and lead it around with nobody on it. Then somebody on it, we'd lead it between two horses. And pretty soon that horse was being reined and trained, and he never bucked once. And their whole purpose is, this way you never break the spirit of an animal. And when you have a horse that his spirit isn't broken, you can be running along, and all of a sudden the horse will put on its own brakes because it's thinking in its own and stop and won't go any further. And why? Because you didn't see it. There was either a hole there, some quicksand or barbed wire, and you have a partner in life that will save your life. But when you take a horse and you just break its spirit, then it will just jump off a cliff with you or anything and won't protect you. So it was a whole philosophical difference that I saw, the way we treated animals, the way we treated trees. Like, we would make ceremonies before we took a tree down. So in other words, I was being taught all this ethics about life and death and everything. And then at school, it was a whole different education.
In some ways, you tell the story over and over again in different ways. You were denied all sorts of things. You were beaten in school. But all the time, you seem to have maintained within yourself a sense of your own value. When the other writers wouldn't stand up and talk, you said that you would. When you were beaten in school and were held back, you didn't fail. You didn't allow yourself to be crushed somehow. Is that your family coming out? Is that your heritage? Is that what you were taught at home?
That's absolutely my parents, my family, and my culture, because my father and my mother lived through the Mexican Revolution, through starvation. My father was 10, my mother was 7. They saw their sisters beaten and raped and killed, and they never gave up because they have the indigenous Indian belief that creation didn't happen. They have no nouns in indigenous language. Everything's a verb, so creation didn't happen. It's still happening. And in such a world, you don't believe in God. You do God. When you walk in beauty, you're doing God. And when you're in harmony, you're part of God. When you find peace, you are God. You're Godding. So my parents and their mother's faith in God is indestructible. And mañana es otro milagro de Dios. Tomorrow's another miracle of God's. Y con el favor de Dios, with the favor of God. That's all they ever say. It's outside their mentality to ever say God has forsaken us and it's the end of the world. Because there is no end. There are no beginnings. We're always right here, completely in union. We never lost the Garden of Eden. We're still gardening. We were sent here to plant the seeds. So I was taught all these things, and that we're not put here to rule the animals in the earth. We're here to harmonize with. And so it's a whole different point of view. The world is wonderful no matter what disaster happens, and it's full of love. And in romance songs, they say, que sabrosas son las lágrimas, how delicious are the tears of sadness, for they touch the heart and we still know that we're alive. This indestructible passion of wanting to live.
You know, but as beautiful as these things are, and they clearly are, and the passion with which you write about them is also obvious, they didn't serve you in some of the worlds you had to enter. In the Catholic schools, for instance, you write later in the book about trying to explain to one of the nuns about the two Bibles, and didn't get you anywhere.
No, it got me slapped, beaten up again, and locked in a closet with the brooms and told I was the devil. Because my grandmother told me that there was a story for girls and a story for boys. There were two Bibles, and boys and girls are very different, so they each need their different story of creation. And then she also told me that originally there were two planet Earths, and that the Great Flood happened on the other one. And it was this huge ship that brought people from the other planet to here, 80,000 people or something, and that they interbred with their cousins here, the Mud People, and that all of us are stardust, and we're walking stars, five-pointed stars, and that we're connected to the universe and to all these other star systems of star people, and that we're helping God plant the seeds here. That's why we were sent to Earth. Not that the garden we lost, it's our job to plant it, and that's why we're here. So it was a whole different, and it sounded so beautiful to come across the universe as a child gathering stardust to be born. And then when we pass over, we don't die. We go back sprinkling stardust across the heavens of what we learned.
So you were taught one thing at home and then told in school that that was all wrong and that even thinking that made you bad. How did you overcome that conflict? How did you merge those two things at all to find your place in the world?
It took me till the age of my 50s and 60s. The first 5 years that I wrote, I had so much hate and rage. I didn't learn to read. I'm dyslexic, off the charts. I didn't learn to read till I was 20. So everything that had been crushed in my spirit here in the American school system, when I went to Mexico and I started living with Indians and seeing things, I began to see that, did you know that the is European-based, only European-based?
No.
The word the?
What do you use in place of it?
In indigenous languaging and all Asian languages and Russian, there's only that tree over there and this tree to give location. There is no the tree. That was invented by the Jews and then popularized by the Greeks. So I learned in Mexico there is no the truth. There's only your truth, my truth, our agreed upon truth. And once I found that out, I began to see that it's okay to have many different opinions about things and many different points of view. And it took me literally to write this book about 100 drafts to finally harmonize these two worlds, because there's even a bigger way to look at it. My parents come from a world that's pre the Bible, that's pre-Jewish European. My grandmothers were both indigenous, one from Oaxaca and one a Yaqui. You know, my parents were born before the automobile, before all these things. And by the time they passed away just recently, they had been in jet airplanes. They knew about computers, TV. 100 years of such incredible growth they saw, and they came from a thinking that was pre-Garden of Eden. So for me, if I can just record their stories right, if I can just get it off, it's like I'm going to languages back to, they say we ate of the tree of knowledge and lost the Garden of Eden. Well, what did we eat? Let's spit it out and start all over again. That's what I'm writing.
Victor Villasenor is the author of Burrow Genius. He lives in Oceanside, California.